When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
The Human Zoo, where they don't hide away the sick animals.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the great dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
Stand to attention when I'm talking to you!
On Talk Radio.
This mess!
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. Well, that's it. All over now, bar the shouting, or at least a little bit of light backstabbing as Boris Johnson prepares for government. That's right, Boris Johnson prepares for government. Last night at the final Boris versus Jeremy Hunt hustings event in London, it was very clear that despite what Sir Roger Gale told us the other day, everyone is backing the former Mayor of London to be the next Prime Minister. So much so that after he finished speaking, hordes of people simply got up and started leaving the event even before Hunt had started talking. Well, you know what he's going to say, and he's not going to say it with very much interest, and so you might as well just get off and get down to the pub. Coming up this morning, we'll be talking about where we go now, specifically where a Boris government will actually lead us, and I'm delighted to say we will be doing it in the company of The Sun and Sunday Times columnist and author Rod Liddell. He's got a new book out. He's the scourge of the politically correct, and he'll be telling us all about the Brexit betrayal. You will not want to miss that. 0344 499 1000. Coming up first, though, we're taking on the BBC, as its own director, General Lord Hall, admits it might actually end up as a voluntary Netflix subscription model. And surely that is the way it's going to go. We're joined by John Nicholson, former SNP MP, of course, who also sat on the Department of Media, Culture and Television, so that we can find out precisely what he thinks about it all. And we'll be joined later by Piers Corbyn, who will be telling us why the ludicrous teenage climate activist Greta Thunberg is now complaining that our government's pledge to reduce carbon emissions to zero is doing more harm than good. It's like loaning somebody 500 quid and then coming back saying, sorry, I need a 1,000. Give me some more money. Heaven help us. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, right here on Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
It is a fine day to do all manner of things today, even though it started raining in the centre of town for some reason. All this global warming is really starting to get to me. We'll be talking to Piers Corbyn a little bit later on to find out what is going on with the teenage activist Greta Thunberg, who apparently doesn't have enough of a good word to say about us, that we're not doing it quickly enough, and she wants us to do it faster and better. We'll come to that in a moment. Right now, though, I'm delighted to say I'm joined by Rod Liddell. The Great Betrayal is the name of the book, The True Story of Brexit. How can I describe you, Rod? Enemy of the politically correct, columnist of the Sunday Times, Emily Maitlis' best friend.
Emily Maitlis' best friend is would be my favourite of that.
Yeah. Yeah. This refers
journalist
back, of course.
Way. Hack.
Yes, yes. Hack. Yeah. And other words which cannot be mentioned at this time of the day.
Indeed.
On the radio.
Indeed.
But you are a thorn in the side, it has to be said, of the establishment, and particularly the sort of media establishment, because I'm reading in your book and you're lampooning quite a few of your sort of fellow columnists.
Yes.
Like David Aronovich and others.
Sorry,
of his,
David.
Others of his ilk. I mean, yeah. It's a very broad church at the Sunday Times, isn't it?
The Sunday Times, yeah, it is. It is a broad church. But an awful lot of the media is... I don't mind liberals. It's when the liberals think that they have the moral high ground all the time and that we're scum as a consequence simply for saying what we believe in.
Yeah.
That's what really gets me.
And the fact that I always say to people, I don't ever remember being told years ago in the last 10 years. People didn't come up to me in the street and go, isn't it great that we're in the European Union? Isn't it fantastic?
Indeed.
But now they're all telling me that we can't leave it because the world will collapse around us and the sky will fall and everything will turn to dust.
Well, it's remarkable, isn't it? And, you know, here's the difference, and it's what I write in the book a bit. People say that we've got a divided society, that this has been corrosive, society's cleaved in two. I don't believe that. I think that and there's a lot of demographic evidence for this. I think there's an awful lot of Remainers who want this stuff out the way.
Yeah.
And who you can have a perfectly reasonable discussion with. They may be angry that we voted to leave, but they're not going to argue the toss because they know it was a democratic decision.
Right.
There's about 4 million. It's about 4 million. It's the 37% of Remainers who defriended people on Facebook because they couldn't bear to talk to anyone
people
who was a leader.
People whose families have been sort of riven way, shape, or
it's
form.
That
I mean,
4 million.
Talk about in the start of the book about the day after the referendum result, which sort of shocked everybody, including Nigel Farage, as it turns out.
Yeah, well, indeed.
That people were saying to each other in leafy parts of London, well, we don't know anyone that voted to leave.
Well, that's the point. And that 4 million, I think it is that 4 million, they all live within these kind of hyper-liberal bubbles. Mm. So the BBC, for example, I know hundreds of people who work at the BBC. I know one person who voted Leave.
And they can't tell anyone.
And they can't tell anyone. I would guess it's somewhere in the region of about 95% of the BBC in favour of Remain. Whereas, you know, the Loveys, there was a survey done, 96% in favour of Remain. Academics, 93% in favour of Remain. So when they say, I don't know anyone who voted Leave, they're telling the truth.
Yes.
They are insulated from the world.
Right. They absolutely are. Well, I mean, I have a programme here which has become known as sort of Brexit, pro-Brexit programme, but it's not particularly. I just am one of those people that, in fact, believes that if you do vote to do something, that you should actually do it.
Well, yeah, I have to say, you're right about that. I mean, I'm disappointed we haven't left the European Union yet, but I'm far more bothered by the chicanery which has gone on over the last 3
years.
Well,
this is the point of the book, isn't
it's
it?
The point
because
of the
your,
book,
your
yeah.
quote you begin with, "Betcha we don't leave," which is what you wrote on Facebook on the day of the result being published. Do you still think we're not going to leave then?
I suspect we're not. I suspect we're certainly not going to leave in a manner which I would want us to. I can't see that Boris Johnson is going to get through a deal which is in any substantial way better than the one which Theresa May put to us. And, you know, Boris is doing exactly the same thing that the Tory party was doing in over the last 2 years. He's saying, yes, we must hold out for a no deal. We must let people know that there is a chance of a no deal. It's our bargaining chip. Well, if you say it's a bargaining chip, it ceases to be one.
Well, exactly.
And also, he said there's a one in a million chance of us going out with no deal. So the EU already knows that no deal is a paper tiger.
Right.
And I suspect that Parliament will block it anyway.
Well, we've already seen the lines being drawn, haven't we? Gina Miller's back out there saying that she's going to stop anything from happening. I mean, I was going to ring her up the other day and say, it's all right if I go out for a pint.
Well, exactly. You know. Did you read that? That wonderful statement that the Prime Minister must notify her lawyers if he's going to do anything. Wonderful.
And then we've got Dominic Grieve.
The narcissism.
I know. The Dominic Grieve narcissism, which is that he alone can save the world. He's sort of like Flash Gordon, you know, from the 1980s. He thinks that, you know, we've only got 24 minutes to save the world. I'm going to do it single-handedly. And then we've got the 30 Tory MPs who are going to say they're not going to allow it to happen.
That's right.
And whenever I talk to anyone who says that the Parliament must be sovereign and the Parliament must be able to do its business, well, that's all very well, but Parliament is actively blocking the will of the people.
The will of
the
people. That's absolutely right. And it's very disingenuous of people like Gina Miller and Alistair Campbell and all these people. I mean, Gina Miller's first argument was that we must pass the process on to Parliament because that's the democratic way to do it. Now she's saying, oh, hang on a minute.
Right.
We don't want Parliament to do what Parliament might well do.
Yes.
So we'll go back to the unelected courts again.
Yes, exactly right.
It's,
and I mean, my problem as well with all of these people is, what is it about the European Union that they don't want to give up on? Because again, going back to what I said earlier, where nobody ever told me what was brilliant about it, and clearly having watched them elect, in inverted commas, their new commissioner,
Ursula, they look good.
You know, and you kind of go, well, really? One candidate? I mean, what are we, North Korea now? So the point is that why do they not want to leave it, is my question, I suppose.
It's very difficult to know. It's particularly difficult to know if, like me, you're from a Labour background. background, which I was, when you look at the grotesque exploitation of underpaid labour, which has come into this country, the conditions in which some of the Eastern European people are forced to live in, so that our
that's in the book as well, isn't
it? There's a lot of that in the book.
Yeah.
So that our businesses can make... I can see why the Tories would go along with that, because it's good for business.
Right.
I cannot, in my imagination... fathom why Labour would support that sort of exploitation. And to his credit, I don't think Corbyn does.
No.
You know, I think he's...
He's a very confused individual at the moment, though, isn't he? I mean, he's being sort of battered and bruised from every side, and he's not really very confident, I don't think, being a leader. I don't think he likes it.
Well, I think in most senses he's been an appalling leader, but I think at least give him this, that on the European Union he has... behaved with a degree of principle in the face of huge pressure from within the Parliamentary Labour Party. And don't forget, I mean, Corbyn has been, throughout his history, and I detail it in that book, opposed to the European Union.
Yes, he's hated
root and branch, he hates it.
And he's been quite vociferous
so
about it as well.
So Owen Jones.
Yes.
Owen Jones was in favour of leaving as well.
Oh, was he?
Yeah. And changed
he's
his
also,
mind.
He's also blocked... I've got a long list of people who've blocked me on Twitter. Because I was looking for you last night on Twitter to see that you're not there. Probably not surprisingly, and I assumed that maybe you'd just given
up
on
sacked,
Twitter.
I'd be sacked, mate. I'd be sacked within a week if I was on Twitter.
It is, I mean, it is a very dangerous arena.
It is a dangerous arena, yes.
But, I mean, I've been having all sorts of rows with... They come in waves, you know. I've had rows with cyclists, I've had rows with vegans, I've had rows with Remainers. I even had some rows with some
They're probably all the same people.
They might be, although I think probably the most unusual were a crowd of Spaniards who took exception to me putting chorizo in a paella and putting a picture out, and they called me a terrorist. Told me that I was in some way breaching the rules of paella.
Cultural
eating.
Appropriation,
yeah,
Mike, that's what it is.
But it really is an extraordinary world that we now live in. Where
it is.
I mean, there are people on Twitter who literally just regurgitate World Trade Organization kind of pages and pages and pages. And I'm like, what's wrong with these people?
But it's also, I mean, the thing I find grotesque about Twitter, which, and the real reason I don't go on it, though I would be sacked if I did go on it without question, because I'd say something at 1 o'clock in the morning and that would be it for me.
Right.
It's just a total lack of context. So you can get quotes from 10 years ago, which they will shove up and say, Rod Little says the Queen should have her head chopped off. They will miss the context of that, which was I was actually arguing the opposite.
Well, it was
that,
a bit like that the other night, wasn't it, on Newsnight with Emily Maitlis and Tom Baldwin. The former Downing Street press attaché, Alistair Campbell, sort of miniature version of, right?
Yeah.
And they were sort of trying to skewer you on things that you'd written without really understanding that some of them might have actually been vaguely humorous.
Some of them were humorous. Some of them were actually to the point as well. I mean, my job is to make people laugh and also to try and say things which I think sometimes people feel can't be said a lot of the time.
Well, I was going to ask you how you continue to get away with it, because you must have the support of the editors that you work for.
Yeah, they're brilliant editors.
Because there are lots of people who would have that dreadful statement that people issue saying, how can this man be allowed to say this?
Oh, it's not merely that. You know, you get people like David Lammy saying that it's a national disgrace that I'm allowed to write.
Yes.
I mean, what?
Yeah, right. You know,
David's a guy who insisted that the British government should apologise to black people for slavery.
Yes.
He was a member of the government at the time, so it would have meant him apologising to himself very profusely.
Mm. And who did we have the other day likening the climate change fiasco to slavery, saying that basically our attitudes to climate change and the need to do something about it were similar?
Yes.
I couldn't believe what I was reading. I mean, after a while, you know, you reach... It's a bit like with Donald Trump now that he's gone sort of full... racist on us.
Yeah.
Everything else has paled into insignificance, but this is no more outrageous than anything else he's ever said.
No, I think that's right.
You hit a sort of a wall in the end, and everything is as offensive or not as offensive as everything else.
But there's an absolute obsession amongst white liberals with racism.
Mm.
It's a kind of self-flagellating obsession with them.
Yeah.
They are absolutely transfixed by it.
Mm.
And eventually the term racism, and racism's an appalling thing, but eventually the definition of racism becomes so broadened that it kind of loses all sense.
And as a white man of a certain age, I think you and I are actually the same age, you're not allowed to have a view on racism because you can't possibly know what racism is because you can't have possibly ever been a victim of racism.
Yeah, yeah. Well, though, never mind that. I've rendered
Rod Little slightly speechless there for a moment, which is quite a good thing. Listen, we want to hear from some of you, though. Rod's going to hang around after the news. We've got lots to talk about.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. Welcome back to the common sense world of talk radio, because Rod Little has just left the studio, and many of you very, very much appreciated the conversation that we had. Many of you tweeting very nice things to us, so thank you very much indeed. A lot of you saying, can you not do this on a regular basis? Well, we can try and get Rod on from time to time because he is a great thinker of the modern world, and he is against this kind of political correctness that we all have to fight from time to time. There's nothing wrong with being nice to one another. There's absolutely nothing wrong with having a certain belief system, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with having a view on something which you strongly hold. But there is something very wrong with trying to make everybody think the same way, trying to make everybody think that they are somehow in the wrong, morally bankrupt, or indeed just stupid if they don't go along with what you think. And I'm going to talk now to a man who also fights against the sort of, shall we say, the one-way traffic of climate change. And it's Piers Corbyn, who is astrophysicist and managing director and founder of WeatherAction.com. Piers, a very good morning to you. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Piers, I've been dying to get you on here for a long time, so I'm very glad that we finally finally managed to do it, because I am not a climate change denier. I am not somebody who is an ostrich with his head in the sand. What I am is somebody who questions on a regular basis the likes of Greta Thunberg, a teenager activist, the likes of Extinction Rebellion, the people who tell me that my world is going to blow up if we don't stop driving around in cars and flying around in aeroplanes. I find it quite ludicrous that the government is beginning to recognise these people and have conferences with them.
Yes. Well, it is ludicrous, of course. And the people that are saying these things, Extinction Rebellion, are completely unqualified.
Yeah.
They quote mysterious scientists, say, sources, and the government then echoes this. But you see, the whole thing is a manufactured protest, and the government want to hear these things because they have some sort of agenda of increasing taxation, which, of course, is favoured by the energy companies because prices go up and they gain. I mean, you see, I think we have to deal with this false narrative by just pointing out, and I think that biology and physics teachers and students in schools should rise up and point out two complete truths. One is carbon dioxide is the gas of life, and we want more of it, not less. And secondly, carbon dioxide levels follow temperatures. They don't cause them. So everything that is being pushed is on this matter is actually creating of a false narrative.
Yeah.
And it will not change climate in any way. The purpose of this false narrative is not to change climate, but to change, to control you.
Yes. And the trouble I see with it all as well is that they're constantly moving the goalposts. For example, when they started to argue that we were the biggest polluters in the world, and then it was pointed out to them, well, surely we're not as big a polluter as India or possibly China. They then came up with the idea that, well, the reason they're polluting is because they're making things for us, therefore it's actually our responsibility. You know, it's a nonsense.
Well, of course, yeah. I mean, all these policies are not to control climate, but to control you, as I said. You see, Northern England has been deindustrialised to save the planet, we're told.
Yeah.
Well, all those steelworks were moved to India produce just as much CO2, or if not more CO2, as before. So there's been no reduction in CO2, and we've just lost jobs, and we've actually paid to lose jobs. And the European Union, of course, is central to this scheme of things. The European Union Emissions Trading Scheme organises this deindustrialisation of Britain, and that's what they want to do for the next, decades, if they manage to keep Britain in the European Union.
Well, quite. And the United Nations, of course, famously back in 1989, said that the world was going to heat up to such a point that nobody would be able to live in parts of it, and we had to do something immediately to change it. Otherwise, by the year 2000, literally, we'd all be walking around in swimming costumes in the north of Scotland every single December. That hasn't happened.
No, they promised us the end of snow, if you recall. And we at weatheraction.com predicted that coldest December for 100 years in December 2010.
Right.
You know, and that was using solar activity. But, you know, amid all this doom and gloom that you and I are saying, I think one should note with a bit of optimism that Extinction Rebellion is losing support. You look at the size of their demonstrations the last few days, and they're basically tiny compared with those insane road blockages of London, which happened around Easter.
Well, it happens, funnily enough, which as I pointed out yesterday, happened around about the last time we had some school holidays.
Well, of course, they're a school holiday game. But now, you know, I think especially the students of biology and science, or physics in particular, are actually beginning to realise there's something a bit strange going on, because the biology teachers tell them the CO2 is the key to life on Earth. And actually, if we removed half of it, plants would die, and we'd all die. So any extinction coming is not something caused by CO2. It would be caused by people like the Extinction Rebellion campaign.
And but also, what about this kind of nonsense as well, which is trotted out not just by the likes of the teenage activist Greta Thunberg, but also, I mean, I witnessed something that I never thought I would see a few weeks back when the whole Extinction Rebellion thing was going on, and some mothers turned up with a bunch of 11-year-olds and called it 11 at 11, and they had 11 of them standing in a line at 11 o'clock on a Sunday morning, telling us all why we had to save the planet to safeguard their future. Now, as I said to somebody at the time, you know, I've got children, one of them's 12, and he's a very fine young man, and he's doing very well at school, but I wouldn't listen to his advice on anything to do with climate, because he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Well, that is true, of course. I mean, the reason why children go to school is to learn things. However, a lot of the education programme has been taken over into a kind of brainwashing function. But this has led to contradictions in schools, as I said, you see. Well, biology and physics teachers that will tell us one thing, actually, if you listen to them, that there isn't a CO2 problem. However, the sort of, I don't know, politics, economics and political correctness classes or whatever they're called in schools are telling or advising children to revolt. Well, you know, this is madness. But you see, there's an agenda behind this. The government want this. The government want a movement to call on more spending or action on climate change. And if you look at what is behind it all, you can see that the Extinction Rebellion idea was supported by and built up by ExxonMobil and the 5G operators, and they were funding the Citizens Online thing, and you can go on weatheraction.com and find out more about it. The other thing is, the World Economic Forum climate report says, emergency, we have to spend more to save the planet. But when you look into what they're talking about, as far as I can see, robbing pension funds of the 72 biggest corporations around the world and spending it on huge, stupid projects like more wind farms.
No, quite.
But anything involving huge spending goes through the banks. The banks will take their cut of, you know, all the money, who knows. And right now, we're in a big crisis where the banks are about to go bust again. And the World Economic Forum, which is the Davos junket operation happening every spring, as you know, they want to rob the biggest corporations and save the banks through that. And that is, I think, the main driver for this utter nonsense going on.
But it doesn't appear to be. I mean, I appreciate what you're saying about Extinction Rebellion's sort of numbers dwindling, because it's certainly true not as many of them around. However, what we have now is an outgoing Prime Minister, Theresa May, who has basically sort of sold us down the river to this net zero carbon emissions nonsense by 2050, which Greta Thunberg is so upset about. She says it's not good enough, right? She needs more. But the point is that this is going to cost us billions and billions of pounds, and we were never actually asked if we wanted her to do it.
No, of course not. No, she wasn't elected to do that. I mean, what we want is action for life, not this death cult, which is Extinction Rebellion.
Yeah.
We want
to stand up
for good things, which is CO2. It's a good thing.
And are you convinced, though, Piers, that in our schools there are enough people like yourself, physics teachers, biology teachers, who are actually teaching this stuff? Because I get the sense that we've lost the schools already.
Well, I think that's largely true, but there are small numbers in schools who are trying their best. But you're right. I think the strength of curricula in schools on science is actually weakened, and they tend to learn sound bites instead. But you know, there's a small percentage of students and staff who do go online, find things out, which is true. And, you know, I've been invited to schools where they've had quite sensible debates, where both sides have been listened to. And you know, when we've had these discussions and we've asked people, and these haven't necessarily been in schools, but involving university students as well, of course. And, we ask them, well, have you become your belief in the CO2 story, has it gone up or gone down? In all times we've asked, we find that more people are now sceptical of what they're told on television and more online with actually the scientific truth.
Although, unfortunately, we'll be talking about this later on in the show, people like Sir David Attenborough, who's, I'm sure, a very fine individual, is one of the most trusted forces on this planet now on the subject of climate change. He walks onto the stage at Glastonbury, age 93, gets a massive cheer and congratulates everyone for having a plastic-free festival, when, of course, it wasn't plastic-free, because that's what all their tents were made of, right? And the stage and everything else. But how did we get here, Piers?
Well, how did we get here? Well, the BBC has been taken over by people who are pushing this false narrative.
Yeah.
But you can understand this when you look back in the BBC and realise you've had a certain David Bellamy, who was a key guy,
yes,
very popular, and when he announced the truth about the CO2, saying it's the gas of life and we shouldn't worry about it at all, we want more, not less, he got the sack. He got the sack not just from the BBC, but every official function he was in.
Mm.
Now, this would happen to David Attenborough if he opened his mouth. And at the age of 93, I don't think he's going to open his mouth other than repeat the script he's given.
No.
Because it's an anti-scientific script. He must know it's nonsense himself. You know?
Yes, which is the tragedy. Listen, Piers, absolutely delightful to talk to you. It'd be great if you could come in one day. I don't know how far away from London you are, if you're in London.
No, I'm in London.
OK, well, why don't you pop into the studio one day? Because I'm sure there'll be loads of people who'd love to ask you questions and call in and talk to you. So please, let's try and sort that out. Thank you very much indeed for the moment, though. Piers Corbyn, astrophysicist, managing director and founder of weatheraction.com. I'll tell you what, this could well be the best show we've ever done in the history of talk radio, or in the history of radio. Let's talk to Richard in Manchester. Hello, Richard.
Oh, good morning, Mike. Thanks
How you
for
doing?
Taking my call again. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, very well indeed.
I've only got a few more days, and on the anniversary of my wife's birthday, which is the 23rd, Mrs. May is out of my life for good.
Well, I mean, she might pop up from time to time on the back benches, but I think you're absolutely right. She's not going to be bothering you quite as much as she has been.
Oh, can she not just retire, take all her money and go around the world and tell everybody how wonderful she is, and her legacy was that she did nothing for this country.
Did you enjoy her speech yesterday that she was not happy about the way that somehow no compromise was being made by certain individuals in the world of politics? I mean, you know, you could have slapped me with a wet kipper.
She did that three times.
I
outside
know.
When things are going bad outside number 10, she gets the easel out, plays the headmistress, and said, "It's not my fault. All the people I've appointed, they're all idiots and all that."
Yeah.
She's just got this. She's got a messiah, a messianic thing like Tony Blair.
Yeah, she has. And she's also in the business of wanting to give advice to the next Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, as to how he should run Downing Street. Well, I don't think he'll be taking any lessons from her.
And then she's got Hammond today coming out and saying the 30-odd billion that he's got in his purse, his money, it's all going to be smashed now because they're going to have these people, is it called draining the swamp? I hope whoever gets in just drains it of all these idiots that I call them. And I'm sorry if I'm being strong.
I firmly
believe, Mike, that these people like Hammond, like Rudd, like Gove, like Gawke, like Grayling, like Lidington, they all sit on those front benches, they've all got the noses in the trough, they're all multimillionaires, and she just says to them, "Today we will laugh," and they all start guffawing at things that I don't find funny, Mike.
No.
And I think the majority of people listening to your programme, if you were there and you were the Prime Minister, you'd run this country better than her.
I think there's no doubt about that. I think my 12-year-old son would run the country better than she has.
I think so. And I think the quicker that she goes, and don't, please don't go on pontificating about her legacy. She's got no legacy. Just give her my telephone number. Let her ring me up and put her husband next to her. And I'll tell her what she's got. She's done nothing for this country, Mike. I mean, you know, the poor people who are dying because of this stupid credit system, the universal credit, and they're still dying today. Do you know, Mike, there's people on nothing, and they're stopping it. They're stopping the credit, and the old people are saying to other people, and I have experience of it, "Well, we've got no money. What are we going to do?" And they're saying, "Oh, you haven't come in and told us, so we'll stop it for another 2 weeks." Actually, Mike, that is going on today.
It's shocking.
Does she speak about that?
No, she doesn't. She absolutely doesn't. Richard, thank you very much indeed. Great call. What a very passionate man Richard is. This is what I love about hosting this radio show here on Talk Radio, which is, of course, the most forward-thinking radio station, the most commonsensical radio station in the world right now, and very fast-growing too because of all you people moving over from a certain place which we cannot mention. Now, Rod, thank you very much indeed for staying with us.
Pleasure, mate.
Because it's a busy old time for all of us, as I say. I mean, my worry about Boris Johnson, just before we move on to a couple of calls, is that he just really, really wants to be Prime Minister
so that he
can tick the box and I was Prime Minister. But I'm not sure he actually believes in anything, does he?
No, I think it's a social liberal. I think that's about as far as it goes. I can't think of anything that he wouldn't do in order to keep himself there.
I mean, waving a kipper around last night, I mean, was one of those kind of great Boris moments which will be remembered. But nobody will remember what he actually said.
It's a problem as well. He doesn't play very well in the north of the country.
No.
New opinion poll.
Particularly not in Liverpool.
Well, not in Liverpool, but also, you know, my neck of the woods up in Middlesbrough and Newcastle, they don't go for that shtick up there, you know.
No.
And they don't go for the great sense of entitlement
that
Boris seems to have. Mm. So I think there's a problem. And I can see Boris tacking towards a Remainer side very rapidly in order, because the maths are the same as they were when Theresa May was there.
They absolutely were. Let's go to the calls and talk to Robert, first of all. He's in Dulwich. Hi, Robert.
Good morning, gents. It's a real pleasure to be speaking to both of you. And thank you for taking the call. My call is, Rod, and Mike, I'm concerned. Here's my concern. I feel that when long and short of it, in the last few years, in the last 20 years, really, there seems to be, we know it's the case now, there's a creeping authoritarianism in our lives. And the last few years have shown that it's actually there. It's full fat. You have to not just do what I say, but think how I think. And I find that terrifying. I find that genuinely scary, that we are turning our back on enlightenment values, that stuff like free speech, which I know it sounds... Well, it's just become ridiculous that people talk about free speech and they say, "Oh, well, you're a classical liberal," and it becomes a pejorative. It's utterly ridiculous. The ability to debate and have an argument and a reason and agree, and disagree if you want it.
Yeah.
We're moving away from that. And this is so dangerous, right? And I look at our schools and they seem to be preaching this intolerance.
Oh, you're not kidding, mate. You are not kidding.
I mean, it's at the point now almost where you have to be careful what you're saying in public, right? Yeah. If you're walking down the street talking to your friend.
Yeah.
Have you found that, Robert?
I've found that. I've also found that when I talk to my kids, and they say something that come back with from at school, I say, and, you know, we're very close as a family, I say, listen, they've got it wrong, this is the real reason, but just agree with your teachers. This is, and then I say, look, you have to respect your teachers, but look, they've got this one wrong.
And oh, do you do that, do you? Because I do the opposite. Yeah. I do the opposite with my daughter. I say, tell them they're stupid. argue with them. Because you are absolutely right. I mean, my daughter goes to a state grammar school, and... This sort of hyper-liberalism, which is what John Gray calls it, the philosopher John Gray calls it a sort of hyper-liberalism, seems to infest every subject other than maths. And I dare say they'll get around to that soon, because there is a professor in the US who has described maths as being a racist subject, which, you know, just goes beyond imagination. But it's in every subject. It's in geography, English, history. The same shibboleths and right-on woke ideas are shoved down their throats, and there must be no dissent. And you saw a kid in Aberdeen who was actually kicked out of his school, suspended for 3 weeks, for having filmed his teacher telling him that he wasn't allowed to take a different view on the issue of transgenderism, for
example.
This
was the guy that said he thought there was only two genders.
That's right. Yeah. Which is right.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But, I mean, if you say that now, there will be a whole avalanche of, yes, of complaints. There will be people waiting outside News UK to lynch you as you walk out. Because the great thing about the tolerant few, Robert, who say that we should all think the same way, is they're incredibly intolerant. Well, listen, thanks for your call. Let's go to Malcolm, who's in Oxford. Hi, Malcolm.
Good morning, Mike.
Morning.
Good morning, Rod. It's
good morning.
A pleasure to speak to you both this
Welcome.
Morning.
What would you like to say?
As I see it, there's been a big positive come out of the Brexit debacle, and that is the way the general public, the electorate, now view their politicians, their elected MPs and the House of Lords, the unelected. And I just wonder whether Rod thinks the same, that there is a political change within the country, and it's never going to be the same again.
Yes, it's you've kind of opened the last chapter of my book. That's exactly what I say. I think it's not just the politicians, though. That obviously the House of Commons isn't fit for purpose. In that, you know, it was 6-1 against Brexit, whereas the public was marginally in favour of Brexit. So it's partly the fact that our views are not represented in the House of Commons, and the other things we've been talking about, such as transgenderism and various other social issues, simply aren't represented in the House of Commons. But it's not just the House of Commons, it's the liberal cultural establishment, which is, you know, the BBC. I think people are losing a lot of faith in the BBC.
I mean, you worked at the BBC for a long time.
Yeah.
You were on the Today programme in a very senior role.
Yeah.
I suppose more years ago than you care to remember. But
yes.
Has it changed a lot since then, do you think?
Yes, it's got far, far more intolerant of dissenting view.
Mm.
It always was a bit. But elites change. You know, you go back 50 years, 45, 50 years, the BBC, the BBC, the Church of England, the establishment generally was right-wing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And at the moment, it's liberal left. And that will change. And I think the caller is dead right that Brexit has shown us that the establishment is so totally out of touch with the people it's supposed to represent, that there is a change coming in politics. I've joined the Social Democrats, by the way. Look them up. They're all right. They're a different kind of party. There's a branch near you. I was up there talking to SDP members in Oxford recently.
And what's their kind of shtick, as it were? What do they stand for?
Well, they're pro-Brexit, and they're quite left-wing on economic issues, but they're also very conservative on social issues.
Mm.
That is
the other thing. I mean, Malcolm, do you share Rod's pessimism about not leaving the European Union?
Not really, because if I was to go down that road, I think I'd be giving up on myself. I'm an associate member now of the Brexit Party, and I was listening to you yesterday, Mike, and you said you were surprised I've actually got what they don't call it, but it is a, like a manifesto. And I've seen a lot of the things that the Brexit Party are going to be bringing forward at a general election. And it actually fits in with my views and ideas. What does he change?
I'm just slightly... Thanks for your call, Malcolm. I'm just slightly unsure of how Brexit and the Brexit Party does in a general election, only because of the way that our system works and the way that, you know, the two-party system, where we had, you know, we've seen a huge UKIP boost at times. We've seen the Lib Dems coming second in loads of seats. But that doesn't translate into power. It doesn't translate into votes. It doesn't translate into seats, rather, you know?
It's very interesting, isn't it? Obviously, if he has a general election before we leave, if we leave...
Which, of course, he said he hasn't done, so there's a pretty good chance he will.
then what happens? You know, does he try and form some sort of accommodation with the Brexit Party? He would have to. Mm. Otherwise, the Tories would be wiped out, I suspect.
Well, exactly. I mean, that is the problem. But do you also think that when we hear these dire warnings that if this is not delivered, the country will be, you know, turned into some kind of anarchist state and there'll be riots in the street? I don't buy that particularly.
No, I don't either. I think...
It's not what we do, really, is it?
It's not. It's what the left does,
right. But yes.
It's not what we do.
No.
I think, sadly, that what there will be is what I hear all the time up in Middlesbrough, which is, well, we tried, but it didn't change anything, so we won't bother anymore. There'll be a sullen resentment.
Yes.
But I don't think there'll be rioting on the streets.
Which is very British. I mean, one of the things I say, and we did a show, funnily enough, just a few months ago, just for a change... And to sound slightly different from some others out there who sound gloomy all the time, is that being positive, which is one thing I agree with Boris Johnson about, is not a bad thing. But I don't remember ever feeling as though my life is so dependent upon politicians that without them doing the right thing, I can never be happy. No. I don't really care what they do.
Indeed.
I don't really have any time for most of them. I don't believe that they should rule my life or indeed increase my mood or decrease it. I just get on with it.
You're quite right. Belgium did perfectly well without a government for 20 months.
No one noticed.
They're
talking about Northern Ireland starting up again. I mean, they're doing fine without one.
Just leave it as it is. Absolutely right.
Remarkable. Well, listen, thank you very much for popping in, Rod. The book is called The Great Betrayal, The True Story of Brexit. I presume available in all of the normal places.
Yeah, not in liberal bookshops, but yes, it's available in all good places.
There's no reading circles going through it.
Yeah, there's got to be some book clubs in Hampstead who are choosing my book this week. There would have to be.
Well, listen, Rod, have a great time.
Thanks so much.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.